Live from Burbank, California, the poison ivy capital of the world, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now he bathes in tomato juice. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, pain sponges and need machines? I hope you had a good weekend. I hope you took a few minutes to reflect on the horrors of war and how bad war is, but I also hope you took some time to relax and have some grilled food items, perhaps maybe some corn, veggie burger, or if you like the meat, maybe a nice rack of baby back ribs, perhaps some chicken. I guess I could keep going, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Maybe some nice grilled vegetables.
You meat eaters have such a great variety.
But on the vegetable side, you got some sliced eggplant or zucchinis nice on the grill. Maybe a...
asparagus?
Sure, maybe throw an asparagus on there. If you got some tinfoil, you wrap a piece of fish up, throw that on the grill, eat a little of that. I was at a barbecue for a while with some friends of ours, some people you know, some people I know, but the woman who owns the house is a vegetarian.
Really?
So they had to... Huh?
Oh, you can't say on the air.
Kristen and Mark. Do you know Kristen?
Yeah. Barely.
Yeah. Well, big party. But it's worse than being at a kosher guy's house. My brother was kosher for a while. Because, you know, they got to cook all their stuff first, the vegetarians, because they don't want to get any meat poo on it.
Absolutely.
Some meat grease on it. A little bit of meat grease is going to ruin the whole thing, sink the whole ship if they have any life-based DNA from meat or blood-based DNA on their piece of zucchini. It's going to cause some serious karmic problems.
Your brain's going to explode.
In the soft machine there. Yeah, something will happen. But I had a nice time. And you, Jim, it was a tedious weekend for you? Is that what you're telling me?
No, not really.
A little draining, a little tiring?
Kind of draining and tiring.
Sometimes it happens. You have too much time to think. You really see yourself clearly, and there's no escape. It's painful.
Yeah, especially when you... Say escape, escape.
Escape? Hey,
yeah.
Dude.
What are you?
I'm a new man.
15 again?
You see what I'm holding right here? No,
the
I come from Brooklyn.
The Anger Management Source Book. I see that.
It's the Anger Management Source Book.
Anger.
I got the anger. Did you say anger on purpose?
I know I didn't.
Oh, all right. I'm glad you didn't because there you go. We're even.
Wait.
All right? There's no escaping now.
Why is that book, like, torn and battered?
It's not. I just got it from Amazon.
It looks like
I'm going to be all better.
I've never seen a book with bruises on it
before. I am going to be all better, Jim. What do you know? Here, see if any of these are familiar to you. Conditions related to anger.
Mm.
Okay? This is aggression. I get a little of that, don't you? Aggression,
yeah.
Passive aggression, hostility. This book is going to change my life. I feel better just having it in my hands. When is anger a problem? How about this? Problem anger. Here's a list. Intends to hurt, punish, disparage, or avenge rather than to build, protect, or defend. Yes. Check. Contains malice, hatred, or hostile aggression. Anything? Stupid? Is excessive or out of control? Yes, see, Mark. Is too frequent, too intense, or lasts too long? Yes, please refer to Mark. Is badly timed? Yes. Keeps you constantly on edge, irritable, cynical, cold, critical, or sarcastic? Jim. Jim.
I'm a very warm person.
Is chronic?
You've never been around me.
Harms
in a warm manner.
It harms yourself, others, or relationships, leads you to do foolish things. Yes, i.e. Mark Maron. Is marked by cruel behavior, including verbal, physical, or emotional abuse, and cruelty to animals. I'm not cruel to animals. I don't hurt them. I don't hurt the animals. Here, look at this. This is the column that I really enjoyed.
You can't get near your animals. They're always hiding. They're feral cats.
That's right, but that had nothing to do with me. I saved them from a life of eating garbage and being at the whims of other animals. My love for them has brought them to a cat paradise. Those cats come out of garbage cans in Astoria. They are now in heaven. Shangri-La for cats, my friend. Look at this. This is the column I like here. The advantages of anger. Who knew there would be some? But I think I'll focus on this section. The benefits of getting angry are energizes. There is no better rush than making your wife cry. Sharpens my faculties, focus, and concentration. Yes, like Jim, right now,
yeah.
I hate you, and I'm very clear about that.
I'm like a big bullseye.
Yeah,
right
now, man, I've never been to have more clarity. Sense of power and control, again, yes. Gains compliance in short term, blah, blah, blah. Deadens my fear. How about that?
Fear deadener.
Yeah. Which, who doesn't want that? Okay. All right. Should we do more of this later? Did we didn't do any news or nothing? We're already done with this segment. That was it. Paget Brewster is sitting out there going, what kind of show is this? I thought it was political. I thought this was a political show.
Anger is very political, Mark.
Tell me about it. And, you know, I don't want to be a buzzkill, but what do you think drove the Haditha massacre there? Completely uncontrollable, unanchored anger. A lack of command, a lack of secession, a lack of, not secession, of command structure. Big breakdown. This is the melee of this particular conflict, this thing. And we're going to go into it later because we're going to go into some comedy and have a lighthearted conversation. Maybe towards the end of the show, as we near the 12 o'clock hour in most places, we'll bring the blood and horror into it.
Look Sounds at this. Great.
Doesn't that sound fun? Look forward to that, by the way. Where are my jokes, man? Weren't they right here? I swear to God they were right here. Hey, folks, we don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here for you now is the first edition of the Mark Maron Short Order News. In another move to revive his troubled presidency, George Bush nominated the CEO of Goldman Sachs to replace resigning Treasury Secretary Jon Snow. You know what? You know, how come I can't talk? All right, the guy's name is Paulson. All right?
Yes.
This guy. All right? He is uniquely qualified for the job because he will be able to explain Bush's economic policies from the point of view of the 12 people who benefit from them. That's clever. You know, I probably would have been
like
better if I read it right through. But
nice
there was
clever.
A...
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man. Do you want to start the whole show over? Are you cool?
I'm all right.
All right. A deadly traffic accident in Kabul, Afghanistan, involving U.S. troops sparked the worst riot in the Afghan capital since the fall of the Taliban. Scores of protesters shouted, "Death to America!" Although at this point, in much of the world, that's the equivalent of saying, "Hey guys, what's up?" Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson says he has accomplished the amazing feat of leg pressing 2,000 pounds. Robertson attributes his strength to an age-defying protein shake that contains soy protein isolate, apple cider vinegar, and of course, Jesus berries. Eh? All right, how about this one? Robertson said now that he's achieved the impossible, he's going to perform the ultimate in miracles, catching a 7-pound perch. That's a political joke. You'd have to be like on the inside and know what we're referring to. Paget Brewster.
Both of those
no
are
idea,
impossible
nothing.
Feats.
Yeah, right over our head. Paget Brewster sitting out there, television star in our midst. Look, take a look at that. That's what a person who has a career in television looks like.
I first saw her in 1993 or 4 in San Francisco.
I think I saw her there, too, right?
On her television
and
show.
And we have a problem with me, is that we're going to address that when you come on. And apparently you're doing a radio show that's not on radio. Why don't I talk to you when you're in the studio so you can talk back at me? Wouldn't that be good? That's the short order news. I apologize. This is sloppy. We'll be back in a second. No? What? Huh? What's going on? Huh? Oh, you know, you're going to have to clean this all up. You know what I mean? You know what, Bill? I've been distracted by someone with a career. Here we go. I'm kidding, Paget. Just take it easy. There's nothing to be afraid of. On the show today, Rick Overton, comedian, okay, from Laughing Liberally. We're going to do that show together. I've just been informed that I'm going first. I've got to take the hit, take the bullet.
Oh,
not
man.
Dean Obadala, who's got 10 minutes in the game. Tom Finnegan from Citizens Against Government Waste. Paget Brewster, actress from the television show Huff. Right now. And Jane Weedlin from the Go-Go's. She was the guitar player. How do you like that?
I remember that, yes.
All right, hang on a minute, Jim, all right?
And now, back to a blower of whistles, Mark Maron.
I'm going to try and get back on track here and get this show going.
Yeah, I wish you would.
I saw the Al Gore movie over the weekend.
Was it funny, interesting, entertaining?
It was educational. It was kind of entertaining, but I got to admit I dozed a little. It felt like class to me, but I'm not judging it. I think there's a lot of important information there. And if you go see the movie, you'll find that any time Al Gore puts a graph up on the wall, mm-hmm. it's going to go up, all right? It's going to start from the left and go up, and it's going to be bad. It starts from, like, here's what it used to be. It was okay, and, whoa, bad. And that's where we're headed. And that's where we are now, bad. And that happens over and over and over again. Padgett Brewster is a regular on the show Huff, where she plays Beth. She's appeared on Friends, the short-lived Andy Richter Controls the Universe show, and she'll be here in L.A. at the M-Bar with Paul Tompkins, who I know, doing the Thrilling Adventure Supernatural Suspense Hour, which is a live old-timey radio show thing that's not on radio. She also has a problem with me, apparently. Now, an outstanding resentment that I think we can deal with.
Yeah, I saw the anger management source book.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
It is.
I feel better just having bought it. Padgett Brewster is with us. How are you? Okay.
I'm great. Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever do that where you're like, I need to learn something about me. I'm going to buy the book. And right when you buy it, you take a look at maybe the first page, put a dog ear in it, and you're like, I'm done. I'm good. All set.
Yeah, you got what you wanted out of it. Now you're done.
I feel better.
There's one checklist.
So what? Now tell me about our history.
Okay. Well, you and I were
in San Francisco.
Local celebrities.
Kinda. You were on television, though.
You were too.
I was.
You were huge.
Yes.
And Blaine Capatch.
Yes, Blaine. Yeah.
And Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And Danny Glover with the biggest things going.
Yeah, all at the same level right there. The other two did a little better than me, Danny and Robin. Seemed to have made a little bit more out of their careers than I had. But there was that brief moment in history where you hear all our names in a sentence. If one was mentioned, the other three were.
Yeah. Blaine Capatch, Danny Glover.
Blaine Capatch. I saw Blaine Capatch on Sunday.
How is Blaine?
He's doing well.
He just got married.
He got married, yes. And he's doing well. He's holding up well. He looks, you know, those thin people, they look good for a long time.
So thin, I know, yeah.
Yeah, like Bill, look at Bill. People don't realize that he's 90, Bill.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that amazing? He looks great. So, yes.
Okay, so I had a talk show
Padgett
on the
Live,
CBS station.
Yes,
The Padgett Show. And
you were very famous.
For 1:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing going.
Yeah.
So I was really big with the old people.
Yeah, people in the insomniac, freaks.
I couldn't even go to Walgreens anymore. I would just be inundated. And yeah, the speed freaks who wanted me to give their baby's mom a job. And it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
But I used to live above that meat market on Haight and Fillmore.
Okay.
That pink building where everybody who was broke lived.
Yeah, is the pork store thing?
Yeah, right above the pork store.
Right.
And there was a video store on
Lower Haight.
Right on Haight, right there, called the Naked Eye.
Steve, that place was the best.
Yes, and Miles. I knew Miles, the redhead.
Miles was this classic guy he was a tall, lanky guy. Literally, you know, when you picture the beatnik who wears a black turtleneck.
All the time.
Yeah, Miles. With
short
his little
red hair.
He's like, hey, man.
Little
he's
glasses.
Always, yeah, he's always a little pissed off about something.
And he just judged everything rented.
Yeah,
didn't matter who you were.
I don't know if I'd go with that one.
Yeah, or just like an eyebrow lift and a...
He was like, he was exactly the condescending beatnik guy at the video store.
Absolutely perfect.
So you and I are in the store one day.
Well, no. There was a stool next to the clerk's chair.
For celebrities.
At the desk. Well, you had to be somebody to sit and hang out in Naked Eye in the afternoons.
Exactly.
Because that's what famous people do. They don't really work.
Yeah,
they
right.
hang out during the day. So if I came in and you were sitting on the stool, I would, that Marin. Got the stool, that son of a... And I would, slowly walk back to my hideous apartment in the pink building. But then if you weren't there and that stool was empty, it was all mine.
Yeah. Isn't that weird how that you go through these phases in your life where the biggest cachet you can have is like either using the bathroom at a place where they don't let people use the bathroom or sitting on a stool next to an ass at the video store. That's hilarious.
Well, Miles was judgmental, but he wasn't an ass.
He was nice to me. It took a while for him to warm up. And
But you win him over. So that's one of those things where...
Yeah. No, he was actually a pretty good guy. Steve was a great guy. A little hyper Steve. Like, hey, what's going on, man? The guy who ran the place, the guy who owned it. You remember
Steve?
Did he
have long hair? No, because
there was
another surly guy. No, I don't think I knew Steve.
This is probably riveting to people of Los Angeles.
Right.
I just realized that after a certain point I should talk about your... No. It was me. You have nothing to apologize for. You're doing tremendous work on Huff.
That's very nice of you to say.
And it got picked up. You're all good again? It's gone?
No, we don't know yet.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with this business?
We find out June 15th.
Just tell people?
Andy Richter's doing the show, the M-Bar show.
He
on
is?
On Friday. Yeah, he's playing a ghost dinosaur.
Andy Richter will be at the Thrilling Adventure Supernatural Suspense Hour here at the M-Bar on Friday. We've actually got a clip of this, and we're going to play it now. This is, I think, Paul Tompkins
and
you.
It's me and Paul Tompkins, yeah.
Okay, here we go.
I simply cannot get over it. Vampires are real.
I can't wait to meet one.
Did you bring the holy water?
Of course.
Brilliant. Add some to this scotch. Pour two glasses and one for yourself, if you like.
So this is the sort of place a vampire leader hangs his cape.
That's the right address, though I expected something more gothic.
Still, Frank, it's rather spooky.
Though not in the traditional sense.
I guess now we know who lives in these suburban McMansions.
Yes, you really got to see it live. Got to see people walking around.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. Do you do it? Is it as if you are doing old-timey radio?
Yeah, we're all standing on stage. We all have our scripts.
And there's a noise guy? Do you have a noise guy?
Yes, we do, finally. That was, yeah, this guy named Joel.
Really?
Spence, finally. Yeah, I saw him do a play where he did Foley throughout the whole play, and so I asked him to join us, and now he does. And so he brings, you know, a boot that he slumps in a bowl of spaghetti, and he waves a saw. And, yeah, he's fantastic.
Oh, that sounds fun. Great. And the M-Bar is a great room. So go to that this Friday. So, like, what? So you don't know how long you're waiting. How long have you been waiting on this Huff thing? Like weeks?
Well, yeah, yeah. We find out
annoying,
June 15th.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but it's cable, so it's weird. You know,
they can do whatever they want.
They can do whatever they want, and they can, you know, run your show whenever they want. And did you hear about the Deadwood guys?
They're done too, right?
I have no idea. It was supposed to be 4 years because the town of Deadwood only existed for 4 years.
And that's such a brilliant, ornate, you know, well written thing. I don't watch it. My wife loves it.
What? Deadwood's not coming back?
Well, he let Milch let all of the contracts lapse.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, a friend of mine plays Ellsworth, Jim Beaver, who was
really?
On Andy Richter. He plays Ellsworth.
That is the best thing.
He let the contracts lapse?
He let the contracts lapse.
Or just by mistake? What, does he work for Air America?
I don't know. I don't know if he... I don't think he meant to do it.
Exactly. I've worked in this kind of environment before where things are sort of like, hey, I don't know, I guess you don't work here anymore. All right, so what else are you working on? What happened to Andy Richter's show? How the hell did that get canceled?
Oh, that was a bummer. Well, it was on Fox.
Yeah. He was funny. He was funny on it. You were funny on it. And now he's funny on what's her name show? On Julia Louis-Dreyfus' show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. This
he's
is even
really
more
funny.
Exciting, though.
Yeah.
Conan, Conan and Jonathan Groff wrote a pilot, and it just got picked up for 6 episodes.
I heard about this.
So it's something... Oh,
ran into Groff.
Something P.I.?
Yeah. Where he plays an unwitting or unsuspecting P.I.
Right.
Someone thinks he's a private investigator, and then he becomes
And so
one.
He just runs with it.
You know where John Groff started his writing career? Writing for me on Short Attention Span Theater. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Hello.
He broke
you?
Out of that soon, though, right?
No, it took about a year. We it took us a year to kill that show.
You let his contract last.
I did.
Last.
I said last. Lasp.
So now, in terms of this live radio show, do you do a lot of live work? I mean, something you're like? Do you like doing? You don't do comedy, did you?
I do. I do sketches with Paul at Paul's show at Largo. I do that every. Oh,
we're running out of time here. Well, hang out a minute. Let's finish this, and we'll talk about comedy. You
okay.
Want you okay? You're comfortable?
Sure. Yeah.
Really?
As long as it's
you?
Not politics. I don't want to talk about politics.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to chime in on some of these pork barrel spending problems that we're. All right, we'll
like
be back
it.
In a sec.
Now back to a man who's too soft for the evening news, Mark Maron.
I think I'm going to learn a lot from this book, the Anger Management Source Book. I'm not plugging it. I have no reason to plug it. I just got it from Amazon today. I should have ordered it from Powell's. I've been doing a thing where I'm not going to do Amazon anymore because I decided to. I don't know why.
Support your local business.
They've got to be bad. Powell's is cool. Powell's is up in Portland, right? Isn't that where it is? We're with Padgett Brewster, the actress, the very funny actress. She's one of the funny ones.
I mean, that's nice. Thanks.
You're funny.
Hilarious.
You're a funny broad.
I'm a broad. Damn.
You're funny. For a skirt, you're pretty funny. See, we're doing it like the old-timey radio show that she's going to be doing Friday. Thrilling Adventure Supernatural Suspense Hour at M-Bar. What time does that start?
Starts at 8 o'clock, I think.
Be featuring Paul F. Tompkins, who's funny and hasn't been on my show yet, and Andy Richter.
Dave Gruber-Allen also. Comes.
Dave Gruber-Allen, very funny, from the Higgins Boys and Gruber, if you're a Comedy Central fan from way back. And Naked Trucker as well. Distinguish disturbed from non-disturbed anger. Imagine that. I'm going to learn a lot of things with this book, my friends. Padgett, you want to hang out? We have to do this thing we do every week.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Every week we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance. Oh, well, that's a deep sigh there.
Yeah, it's been a long weekend.
Yeah.
Joyce Ballantyne, creator of the Coppertone Girl. 88-year-old Joyce Ballantyne, the artist who created the bare-bottom Coppertone Girl, now regarded as a piece of Americana, died of embarrassment last week when a mischievous basset hound pulled down her adult diaper at a local bingo game.
No.
Yeah, that's true. Within months after its release in 1955, Ballantyne's image of the little girl and the dog became synonymous with Coppertone.
copper tone and skin cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just making me sad.
Got a, oh, man, something in my eye.
Yes, yeah, allergies probably. It's just that time of year.
Yeah, well, pollen.
Yeah.
Throughout the years, Ballantine's image carried such slogans as "Don't be a pale face," followed by "Tan, don't burn," and the more recent "Okay, this isn't what you think it is. You're under arrest." For two decades, Ballantine was also an illustrator for Sports Afield magazine, creating the iconic image of a bear pulling off the bottom of a big game hunter's leg. Just rip it right off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a funny one.
Whew.
Yeah.
Ballantine is survived by millions of baby boomers with the hideous skin of an old wrinkled purse.
Oh, yeah. You all right? You need a Kleenex or anything?
I wish I had one, but I...
all right, I'll try and find you one.
Thanks. Lou Carroll, the man who gave Nixon the dog Checkers.
Hmm.
Lou Carroll, the man who gave Richard Nixon the Cocker Spaniel that saved his career, is dead after suffering through 54 years of being known as that jerk who gave Richard Nixon the Cocker Spaniel who saved his career.
Yeah.
One summer day in 1952, Carroll packed the puppy into a crate addressed to the Nixon daughters, an act that destined the poor dog to suffer a lifetime of false recrimination every time their dad farted. Nixon was a... hard guy to
problem, right?
Be around, you know.
Colitis or something. I think.
Oh, he blamed everybody for his problem.
Yeah.
What's the point of that joke?
I got it.
The Cocker Spaniel was to become Nixon's most famous political asset, alongside his steely-eyed glare, clammy handshake, and that funny ability to lie about everything.
Uh-huh.
Not too funny, but it was true.
It was true. Yeah. It kind of jumbled it at the end.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's life, right?
Yeah, it sure is.
Take out the anger management book, will you?
Got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That act has been credited with altering the course of American history, as well as giving dogs everywhere yet another reason to pee in their master's slippers.
Mm-hmm.
Carol is survived by a wife, two sons, and the looming punishment of being hounded for an eternity in hell by the embittered ghost of a vengeful Cocker Spaniel. This has been this week's Weekly Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Thank you, Mort. Send Jim back in, will you?
Okay. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Jim. What's going on?
Hey, I'm back in the room.
You know, Padgett Brewster was here.
Oh, yeah. We met earlier.
Jim.
Yeah. How about this one? But minimize contact with provocations. Yeah, for anger. I would have to quit everything. I would have to move someplace where I didn't talk to people to minimize contact with provocations.
Is it minimize contact with other people by provoking them? Or what?
I think it means that if you could, you know, people, places, and things kind of thing, where it's sort of like try to get away from the people that make
anger you.
Yeah. Which would be, yeah, on any given day.
Yeah, where do you go?
Are you an angry person?
I get enraged by mechanical objects that don't work the way they're supposed to.
Then
so
do you break them?
I do a lot of, yeah.
You do?
I smashed a fax machine. It was the most satisfying. That was about 2 weeks ago, but I'd gone a good 2 years without smashing anything. It's never people.
Right.
I slashed someone once, but that was a mistake. It's usually if a phone...
Yeah.
Answering machine, cell phone, camera, something doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It has one job.
Yeah,
Then it's got to be punished.
And you break it?
Smash it.
It's always a good way to get it working again. A lot of times, I love that.
Sometimes it does work. That's the thing. What have you got to lose?
Yeah.
So
bam,
I punched my fax machine.
Yeah.
No.
Nothing.
Worse.
Yeah.
Punched it again.
Yeah.
Now even worse.
Yeah.
Shards of plastic.
Oh, ooh, shards of plastic.
But then here's my new. Gently took the phone cord out of the wall, unplugged it, gently walked out the back onto the deck, over the head, smashed it down some concrete steps.
That's very
satisfying. Then got a hammer. Gently, calmly walked inside and got it. It wasn't a hammer. It was one of those. It's like a mallet.
Yeah, yeah.
Smashed
me?
The. No, but I just used it to soften up some chicken.
Uh huh. And you smashed the fax machine with the hammer?
Smashed it to pieces, and then I let it sit out there in the rain so that it would really know that it had failed.
Was it whimpering? Was it like, you know,
no, it was a silent death.
I got a recommendation of a book for you. This is the Anger Management Source Book. Beating the hell out of a fax machine to that degree.
It's terrible.
But it felt good. It's satisfying, right?
Yeah, but I definitely have got. I've had 3.5 years of therapy. Now I'm over the anger thing. And it used to be self anger. If I forgot to bring my cell phone in the car,
yeah,
I would slap myself in the face.
Really? You'd literally
hit
yourself in the face?
A crazy person does that.
Yes, that's crazy.
So I haven't done that. Now I haven't done that in like 3 years now.
I don't think I've ever punched. You know, I've hit myself.
Not punched. You haven't punched yourself in the face.
No, I haven't punched myself, but I give myself a pretty hearty punch on the arm right here for being a
to punish
jerk.
Yourself for doing something bad?
Yeah, but not too much. You know, usually I just say bad mark, which is scary to do that in public. So what you don't know what you're working on then, right now, immediately, in the immediate future.
I'm starting a movie in a couple weeks called Sublime that's going to be directed by Tony Krantz, and it stars Ed Kavanaugh Tom Kavanaugh.
Tom Kavanaugh from Ed.
It's a really horrific, creepy thriller horror film. So we'll see if
and
Tom
he's the
has
lead
the
of that. I think he could be creepy. I think he's just in Ed. He was creepy.
Love Monkey.
Love Monkey was very creepy. So I don't think he's that far from it.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's coming up. And I just finished a movie with Terry Garr. And Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh, yeah.
In Utah.
How's Terry Garr?
Which Gruber is in.
Oh, really?
Wayne Fetterman. A bunch of people you know, I think, are probably
I just did
in.
A show of Fetterman. What's that movie called?
It's called Unaccompanied Minors. It's a kids movie. Warner Brothers are editing it now. It comes out in November, I think.
How is Terry Garr doing?
Lovely. Fantastic.
Her
and
health
doing
is
great.
Okay? That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, doing great.
She was so such a great talent.
Yeah, is still.
That's great. I'm she's so glad
very
she's doing
funny.
Well.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you stopped by to talk to us. Did you have fun?
I did. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you feel satisfied with your appearance on The Mark Maron Show?
I'll go home and listen to it and slap myself in the face once or
no!
twice. No! Be funnier! And then...
No, just throw the radio around. Take that radio out.
I know. I won't beat up my radio for your show. I'll kiss it.
Okay. Paget Brewster, good luck with everything. We'll talk
Thanks
to you
Thanks for
again.
Having me.
Time to see a guy about a dog, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Coming up on the show, Rick Overton, comedian. Be working with him on Saturday night, laughing liberally at the Walford Theater here in Los Angeles. We're going to have Jane Weedlin from the Go-Go's. It's an entertainment-based show tonight, but now we're going to get into it. We're not only going to get into politics, we're going to get into the nuances of legislation and how our representatives steal from us to put the money into the pockets of their cronies or themselves. Most people I know are broad strokers, Jim, when it comes to politics, not nuanced, not wonky. I'm glad that there are people like Tom Finnegan, who is the spokesperson for the Citizens Against Government Waste, out there keeping their fingers on the pulse of the pork added to bills and calling the congressmen and senators out, the ones that are guilty of bilking the public out of their money and putting into their pockets or their friends' pockets. Tom Finnegan is with us on the phone. Welcome to the show there, Tom.
Thanks a lot. That was as good as an explanation as any.
It was, right? It made sense, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
On your website, it says, because the definition, pork, it's not that hard to understand, I guess, but it's hard to keep up with. But it says, a pork project is a line item in an appropriations or authorization bill that designates funds for a specific purpose in circumvention of established budgetary procedures. To qualify as pork, a project must meet one of 7 criteria. And what are those criteria?
Well, if it's requested by only one chamber of Congress, if it's not requested by the agency, or the key ones are if it was added in conference. And what that means is that it didn't go through the normal process. It was added in a late stage, basically behind closed doors anonymously. So it's just a way for members of Congress to fund their pet projects without going through any kind of scrutiny or accountability.
But I'll tell you, your website, which you could get at www.cagw.org, really is thorough. It shows exactly, you know, who is responsible for these for taking this money out and why they do it. And you have a porker of the month. Who is it this month?
This month it's actually co-porkers. It's 2 senators from Mississippi, Matt Cochran and Trent Lott. And basically, Congress is working on a $100 billion emergency spending bill, the purpose of which is to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and hurricane recovery in the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But these 2 senators inserted $700 million to relocate a rail line in Mississippi, even though it's already been rebuilt.
Is this one of those at-a-conference deals? One of these backroom additions to the bill?
Yes, definitely. And but now it's going through negotiations, and the latest word is that it may be stripped out. But because these members are so Congress, even if it's stripped now, they could get money for it later. But basically, this rail line was destroyed by the hurricane, but it was already rebuilt with insurance money recently. Uh-huh. And now they want to spend $700 million more to relocate it a few miles to the north. But the basic purpose is to try to spark economic development for, you know, land developers and casino owners and people like that. People who really are not, you know, not the typical down hard on your luck, you know, poor family who can't afford to rebuild their house. I mean, this really is a special interest kind of corporate welfare provision.
So now it seems like we've had other guests on the show in talking about, you know, the nature of corporate welfare. If you go to your site, really, if you put about an hour in and start, you know, poking around and looking at things, you can really tell, you know, which corporations own which politicians. You can tell, you know, which politicians, you know, actually, you know, operate at behest of corporations almost exclusively. Who are the worst offenders outside of the porkers of the month this month?
Well, actually, I was going to say Trent Lott. He not only just for this, but also for, you know, shipbuilders in his home state and people like that, huge government contractors. I mean, there's that old saying, you know, my country may it always be in the right, but my country right or wrong. But the feeling on Capitol Hill is, you know, my pork, right or wrong. You know, as long as it's going to my state or district, it doesn't matter if it's really necessary. But it's good, and I'm going to support it. And that's the kind of the attitude that we're trying to reverse.
And that has to be reversed in order for the government to work effectively again. And I just think what's amazing about your website is even when I come to it, when I'm looking at it, I know this stuff exists, but this is almost in every piece of legislation that goes through these houses.
Oh, definitely, especially these emergency bills, because nobody's going to vote against a bill that funds hurricane recovery or the troops. No one's going to vote against that. So they take advantage of that and just tack on all these projects because they know it's probably going to get passed.
Well, how come there's no regulating effect that is engaged by people that might be against them doing that?
Well, there are procedures under which that these projects can be challenged,
uh-huh.
But those rules are just waived every year.
Okay.
So, I mean, basically, now the rules changes that they're talking about with lobbying reforms, and they're going to make it harder to waive those rules. So, I mean, it's a very complicated, nuanced process, but basically congressional leadership decides, you know, we're not going to follow the rules this cycle, so, you know, we're just going to waive them.
So as a watcher of Congress, what do you make of this bipartisan effort on behalf of in the House, on behalf of Hastert and Pelosi to and now Sensenbrenner's Judiciary Committee is investigating this FBI investigation? What do you think the politics of that is?
Well, I just... And which investigation are you referring to?
I'm referring to the fact that the FBI going into Representative Jefferson's office.
Well, I think Congress would be in a better position to complain if they did a better job of investigating themselves. I mean,
yeah.
the House and Senate ethics committees, I mean, they don't do anything. I mean, it took them this long to start an investigation of the congressman who's thrown out last year from California.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, if they did a better job themselves, maybe they can make an argument that the executive branch should leave them alone.
You're talking about Duke Cunningham?
Yes, Duke Cunningham, exactly.
Yeah, it's just a bizarre thing that these guys, you know, are really, that this is, it, by definition, these type of pork, these pork barrel spendings, it's corruption on some level, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, especially now you're seeing members of Congress directing pork projects to groups and companies that donate to their reelection campaigns.
I can't believe they can get away with this, and I know that this goes on. And as I said before, I just don't think that most people, you know, understand, you know, just, you know, how much money is at stake, how much of it goes. Well, what was one of the most surprising things you saw, you know, outside of this this railroad bill, the one that Lott and the other Mississippi senator added on to the big appropriations bill? But what are some of the other ones that just blew your mind?
Well, we release our pig book every year, which is a collection of all the pork in the federal budget. And this year, it included $500,000 for the Sparta Teapot Museum in Sparta, North Carolina.
Come on. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the federal government has, you know, a $400 billion deficit. Now a teapot museum has to be a top priority.
I don't even understand. And that was a congressman or a senator from North Carolina?
Yeah, both senators from North Carolina actually took credit for the project.
And I just don't know how they can justify that. Now, do you assume when you see this stuff that there's something in it for them? On that's a museum, a teapot museum. I mean, is some of that money going to come back their way somehow?
Well, maybe not in that particular case, but, you know, like Representative Mullahan in West Virginia, he's embroiled in a huge scandal right now because, he actually set up 5 nonprofit organizations and directed hundreds of millions of dollars to these organizations and then staffed them with friends of his and former aides, and they all had huge salaries, and then they all donated to his election campaign. So it's just this huge kind of, you know, kickback cycle.
Wow. And our guest is Tom Finnegan from Citizens Against Government Waste. And also, you know, you see a lot of this stuff with why senators are bad. Like, you know, Joe Biden, in terms of regular legislating, because he sort of his state is home to all those credit card industries, he was part of that horrendous bankruptcy bill. And this kind of stuff happens all the time.
Right. I mean, all the time. And it's both parties either. I mean, it's both parties, you know, Republicans and Democrats, although the practice of pork barrel spending has exploded in the last 10 years.
Now, in terms of what needs to be done from where you're standing, what does your site hope to achieve?
Well, I think we try to remind people not to judge pork only based on the projects going to their district.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're trying to remind people that, yeah, you might get some money, but, you know, you're going to be funding a tattoo removal program in California, and all these boondoggles around the country you're going to never benefit from. So, really, there's no net winners here. You're still paying far more than you're getting back. And also, we need, you know, actual procedural reforms within Congress that, in the lobbying bill, for example, it includes transparency provisions that, you know, when a member requests an earmark, they have to have their name attached to that project in the bill.
Right.
And it's kind of surprising, but we don't know who requests these projects.
But someone must know. The guy sitting next to him must know. They must know within the House.
Right. They actually make the request in writing to the Appropriations Committee.
Right.
But that's like privileged information.
Oh.
Congressional correspondence is actually exempt from the Freedom of Information Act. So if they actually don't, and the Appropriations Committees have rules against commenting on who requested what project.
No
so
kidding.
Really, the entire process is designed to kind of shield lawmakers and lobbyists from, you know, the taxpayers and public knowing what they're up to.
From the scrutiny, so that's how they get away with it. Oh, well, that's good information to know. Tom Finnegan, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay, man, we'll do it again.
Okay.
All right. The website is Citizens Against Government Waste. It is CAGW.org. You can link to it on markmaron.com. We'll be back with Rick Overton and Jane Weedwin from the Go-Go's.
And now, he likes pork, but he doesn't like pork. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We've got Rick Overton, the comedian, coming up, and we've got Jane Weedwin, the guitar player from the Go-Go's, is going to come up and talk about a record that she's involved with, and also a live performance of 80s hits done acoustically down at the Viper Room. People like Thomas Dolby and Tommy Two-Tone and couple of those other cats. There's some actually great songs from that era. There's a couple of things I wanted to cover, though. This I find reprehensible, that President Bush has invited the relatives of about 40 passengers and crew members who are portrayed in United 93 to join him for a screening of the film at the White House on Tuesday. I wonder if he's going to thank them for defining his presidency by sacrificing their relatives. I wonder, you know, where does it end with this guy politicizing that tragedy and taking, I think, a relatively jingoistic movie for the most part, and then patronizing the survivors of the real people in this particular crash. What kind of press does he seek to get from that? This guy is shameless, and I find it reprehensible that he would do that and make it seem like, you know, I'm just being a good president. This is a guy that can't even talk about or address the fact that Americans are being killed on a daily basis in Iraq. And the other thing that frightens me is that Bush, President Bush, he learned about the Haditha. I hope I'm pronouncing this right.
Haditha.
The Haditha massacre, that he learned it from Time magazine, that he wasn't briefed on it until after the fact.
Thank goodness for the press.
Yeah, but he's the president. If people aren't aware, I'm sure you are aware of what we're talking about here, because I think this is a very defining moment for this particular conflict, for the Iraq war. Outside of Abu Ghraib being just a heinous transgression on a humanitarian level, and also a heinous transgression of the train of command, is that you have here on November 19th, basically what happened that day is a Marine squad were hit, and one of their men died. And in as a reaction to this, some of these Marines went out and they killed a bunch of civilians in a taxi, and then they went into houses where some of the bullets were coming from, and just killed women and children in an execution style. This happens when there is a breakdown of a command structure in the conflict. It also happens in a conflict that where you have Marines and American soldiers up against an enemy that they can't define or see, or there are no front lines. It's basic guerrilla warfare. But what it really is emblematic of is that, you know, this war is a tedious, irresponsible drain on these guys. I mean, I'm not going to let them off the hook. I mean, they need to be tried. They need to get to the bottom of what happened. But when something like this happens, it is emblematic of a conflict that is without resolution and probably will not, you know, find a resolution. It happened in Vietnam. I'm sure it has happened in other wars. But in this particular way, where you've got these squads of guys out there in a volatile situation who are festering with anger and act out in that anger after one of theirs gets hit, this means that they are defying the command structure and acting out of complete impulse and violent rage. And to me, this is an indication that this war, in a lot of ways, is a lost cause, and it needs to be reassessed. And now you have a redeployment of troops. After all this talk of the last few weeks, you have a redeployment of troops of about 1,500 from a reserve force in Kuwait into the Anbar province, which is out of control. So it continues to go out of control, and I imagine as this Haditha massacre blows up, you know, how the Iraqis are going to respond to it on a governmental level and also on an insurgency level is unknown. But, I mean, this is horrendous. I mean, when you really think about it, it's as if, like, you and I, like, if someone from our neighborhood shot a cop, and all of a sudden the cops just came into our house and, you know, started killing our family members because they were upset about that. This is one of those things that makes the war, you know, all too human for everybody involved. I mean, I'm angry at the Marines, but I'm more angry at the command structure and at the president. And I don't know if these guys are going to be taken to task at all. I don't know if Rumsfeld or Cheney or George Bush is going to have to even address, you know, why something like this can happen.
Well, if he had his way with the press, he never would have had to address it because he never would have learned about it.
That's right. Well, I think that's exactly what he plans. That's how he plans it. It's like his first reaction was probably like, how'd they get in there? The reason this got turned up is because, Time Magazine, there was some pictures taken by a naval officer, and then there was this video footage that turned up from an Iraqi journalist that was completely condemning. And there was a cover-up on behalf of these Marines. They think it's probably a sergeant and about three other shooters who did this, but then they sought to the report that went in was that these people, these 24 or so people, were killed in a blast in this insurgence, in the conflict with these insurgents that were firing on these Marines. I don't know, man. This is one of those things. I didn't live through Vietnam, but this is one of those things that as I said before, is a symbol of a breakdown of a command structure. It is an indication of an unwinnable war, and it's also just, you know, emblematic of the frustration and horror that Iraqis and American soldiers are facing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, the good news is that it's taking us a shorter amount of time to learn about the massacres than it did in the Vietnam War. It took about 2 years to learn about the My Lai massacre, and now it's taken us only, since November.
Yeah, that's still a long time before Murtha got briefed on this. And I just think that this is something that should be talked about as a symbol, you know, and not only as a mistake, but as a symbol of frustration and I guess futility on some level.
You said they were defying their command structure. I think it's more like they're defining their command structure by doing what they did there. The massacre, I mean, I think they're actually going with what they were taught, you know, in the long run, which is virtually nothing. And then
I don't know.
Left out of control in a situation that's out of control.
Well, I think that that is true and that there's a breakdown in that. But I think this is one of those examples of, you know, let's get some payback, you know, without any question of what that means. And this was done out of complete anger. I don't think this is like Abu Ghraib. I don't think that this has been allowed to happen. But I think that there is an oversight that that needs to be addressed. We'll be back with something a little more entertaining. Jane Weedlin from the Go-Go's will be on the phone with us.
And now he's shooting steam into the air. Mark Maron.
That's because I'm run on steam, right? Is that the end?
Right, or you know, you like the volcano.
Don't you love these songs? The Go-Go's were like one of the...
I grew up with them.
The great bands of the 80s, without a doubt. Jane Weedlin was and is the guitarist for the band. She was also a cast member on The Surreal World and appears frequently on any number of VH1 shows. This Thursday, that is Thursday, June 1st, Jane and some other 80s icons, including Rick Springfield, will appear at the Viper Room supporting this new CD that got out, 80s Hit Stripped. That's from Sidewinder Records. You can link to it on my site at markmaron.com. It also features newly recorded versions of Only the Lonely by the Motels, She Blinded Me with Science by Thomas Dolby, 867-5309, Jenny by Tommy Two-Tone. And the Go-Go's are also touring. Wow, you must be so busy, Jane Weedlin.
I am busy. My head's spinning.
It must be spinning. So now, how many performers are on this gig this Thursday?
Gosh, I don't know. I think around five or six of them.
Now, do you guys are you, like I what I've read now? So is Thomas Dolby going to be there? And what's the guy's name from Men at Work?
Oh, Colin Hayes.
He's going to be there too, right?
Yeah.
Now, do you guys all get along? Is it? I mean, is it like some sort of...
We're best friends. Honestly, I don't even know anybody.
You don't?
No, I don't know any of those people. Actually, I have met Colin Hayes once. He's a very nice man.
So it's not like somewhat like weird...
It's not like some party where all celebrities are friends with each other and, yeah.
80s summer camp. Like, right. You know, like, I'm a comic, so I see a lot of guys I haven't seen in 10 years. It's like, oh, my God, how have you been? None of that?
No, aww. None of that, actually. I wish it was more like that.
That's too bad.
I know. It's one of the things when I was growing up, I thought... When I become a rock star, I'm going to have friends that are rock stars.
Yeah.
I don't have any friends that are rock stars.
How did that happen, Jane?
Sucks, dude.
Except you're a rock star.
It's not enough.
Oh, God. I don't think it ever is enough. Like, if you had your choice of being friends with a rock star, one of your heroes, who would it be?
Probably David Bowie.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be rad.
Do you ever hang out with him? Do you ever talk to him?
No, I met him once. He was very nice.
You know what I saw? Do you know they have these? Dick Cavett released a bunch of his shows on DVD
mm-hmm.
with musical stars on them.
I remember when he was on that.
Oh my God!
That was
weird. It's so trippy, man.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's not weird like that anymore, though.
Well, you know he's alive, so whatever was going on back then, and however weird it got, he survived it. And yeah, he can't be that weird.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Surreal Life. Why do you do that? Was it just for fun or
masochist?
Like the offer came and you're thinking like, I don't know, it could be fun or what?
Exactly. I thought this could be fun or it could be a nightmare. Actually, it was a bit of both.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was really hard.
Yeah.
I felt like a lab rat in a maze, actually.
It must have been weird. I think a lot of those shows are weird. My friend Jim here watches them constantly. Did you watch Jane on that show?
Yeah, yes. Heather and I watched it.
And
every
how
week,
did
yes.
you? Was she your favorite?
Well, she was the like you know turned out to be the only kind of sane one there of a whole bunch. It seemed like the one you were rooting for. Hey, what's going on? You
know? So, did you find yourself in a maternal position with all the others?
Which is very odd, considering I don't have children. Yes, I did. I did.
Well, there's that part of you that I guess it craves it, and you found your place there.
Yeah. I never felt so normal as when I did that show, honestly.
Well, that's good. So it was a reaffirming experience.
Well, it was. Actually, it wasn't a reaffirming. I never knew I was normal till then. I always thought I was such a crazy gal. And then I did that show, and I'm like, God, I am not even close.
Do you find that you were crazier when you were younger? I remember seeing the Go-Go's Behind the Music thing, and you guys were pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but it was fun.
I don't think
crazy.
I've gotten that much less crazy. Maybe a little.
Yeah.
Maybe a little.
Where are you guys? When are you going to start touring?
We've been actually touring since, when did we start? In March. We've been touring off and on since March.
And how
does... like a few weeks on and taking time off. We do it like a ladies who lunch kind of schedule.
Yeah. And how, where, what size of places are you guys playing? Where are you guys going?
Well, in L.A. we're playing the Greek.
Oh, that's great.
That's big.
Yeah.
And we just last week played the Nokia Theater in New York City.
How was that?
That was awesome.
Really?
Oh, my God, what a nice place.
And did who opens for you?
We didn't have any openers.
Oh, really? Just mm-hmm. And how? Who comes to see you? Is it all ages? Do parents come with their kids now?
Yeah, we kind of get a mixture of people that kind of grew up with us in the college and high school years, and now they have kids. And we get a lot of teenagers, too, that somehow have discovered us and like it.
Well, you know, it's weird. That whole era of music is back. You know, in terms of, you know, even like the way we dress then and the sound.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? Because that was really sort of like the whole new wave, pop new wave thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. I find it's really good party music, and I'm not a very nostalgic person, but even I find when I have parties, I'm constantly grabbing for the 80s stuff, like, you know, B-52s and... A lot of that music, you can't find anything current that sets the mood with the way the 80s music does.
Do you go ahead and put the Go-Go's on at your parties?
I do not do that, no.
I just had this weird picture of your friends going, Jane's putting the record on again, it's weird.
But I do sneak into karaoke bars and sing them.
Really?
No, I don't.
Oh,
I would not do that.
So now, okay, so let's talk about the other gals in the band. Are you all getting along now?
Yeah, we get along. It's kind of off and on. We have our moments.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, we really like playing together, and that's sort of the bottom line.
Well, that I remember that as sort of being the theme of the film I saw, is that, you know, when you guys started doing it again, that you really had a great time.
Yeah.
Where are you going next?
Oh, my God, I'm exhausted.
Really? That's excellent radio, by the way.
It's not you, it's me.
It had nothing
You're a
to
really
do.
Great guy.
Oh,
but,
good, thank
no.
God. Had nothing to do with me, right?
Where are we going?
Do you want me to go to the website?
I can't remember.
I'll look it
you
up.
You know what? I feel terrible. I'm supposed to be talking about this. Hold on. Let me open my diary.
You have a diary?
Of course I have a diary.
Will you read us an entry?
Rehearse. That's on June 20th. That's going to be really exciting.
Rehearse. Can I go to that?
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to be in Vegas. We're going to the Midwest. That's why I couldn't remember. Just kidding. I'm actually from the Midwest. We're doing a couple shows in Wisconsin in June. We're going to be playing at Summerfest here in Bratwurst and the Go-Go's.
I bet you get huge crowds there.
Well, Summerfest.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
you
I
don't
mean,
even have to be popular to get a huge crowd there.
It's the only thing to do there.
Yeah.
But everybody loves the Go-Go's. I mean, who doesn't like the Go-Go?
I don't know. Some sourpuss doesn't like us somewhere.
Yeah, that bastard.
I haven't met him, though.
Okay. Now, the show this weekend, is it all acoustic or no?
Yeah.
On Thursday.
I'm not going to cheat or anything. I don't even own an acoustic guitar, by the way. I'm hoping someone's going to lend me one.
Really?
Maybe.
Maybe
and
can...
I'm thinking of having a bongo player to accompany me.
Why not?
I was like, what can I do that just hasn't been done? And I've never played with a bongo player. So.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I think acoustic versions of rock songs are great. I once saw Sid Straw do an acoustic version of Highway to Hell in New York, and I thought it was great.
Wow.
It was great.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, and what's Thomas Dolby going to play? How's he going to function without machines?
I don't know, but I can't wait to hear that. I haven't heard the record yet, by the way.
I haven't either. I don't think you can get it yet. I went to the website hoping I could get it, but I can't get it.
Oh, okay.
You can order it, pre-order. It's supposed to be out today, but they don't have it.
Oh.
Or I would have played it. Now, the Go-Go songs, which are your favorites, and which ones do you make the most money off of?
Those are one and the same. I like to Sealed. I mean, come on, I wrote it, so I don't.
That
I
is your song,
it.
Right? That's amazing. That's
I love that song.
That's one of the greatest songs ever written.
Oh, shut up.
It's like a perfect pop song. I'm
it
telling
you. It is a good song, though.
All right.
And I'm very happy that I wrote that one.
What was I supposed to say?
And I still like it, which is nice.
Yeah. Who was that other kind of like weird new wave-ish band, kind of gayish, that did Our Lips Are Sealed really well?
Sunboy 3.
Yeah. That was a good version.
That was a good version.
You made a few bucks off of that too, right?
I did.
Publishing's an amazing thing.
Listen, I live in a gigantic castle. I'm so rich. Okay, I'm still kidding. But no.
You're rich and exhausted.
I'm rich and exhausted. Right. And I'm happy. That's what counts.
Well, Jane Weedland, thanks for talking to us. It was really fun. Have a good show with the bongo player and with the Go-Go's later in the summer, even if you're going to be, you know, on the same bill with Bratwurst.
Yeah, so let's just push this thing one more time. Thursday night, June 1st.
At the Viper Room.
The Viper Room. Lots of groovy 80s people getting together for the cause of stripping songs.
Right on.
What happened was I thought it was a CD about strippers.
Well, let's just leave it at that and people will come. Just see you later, Jane.
Things will be stripped.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. We'll be back with Rick Overton. Hang out.
Now he was born via a D-section. Mark Maron.
You can't even explain what that is. That's some nasty stuff there. I was actually a C-section. In the house right now, here in the studio, Rick Overton, who will be appearing with me on June 3rd at the Walford Theater for Laughing Liberally. You've seen Rick in many films and many television shows. I'm on his website right now. I can't even. North Fork is the one. Groundhog's Day, I think people would remember you from.
That's right. The movie that plays over and over.
Yes, and it does play over and over. And you've been a guest star on millions of TV shows. Let's do this now, because we're going to be doing this gig on Saturday.
That's right.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be me, you, and Durst, Dean Obadala, Jim David, very funny guy.
Absolutely. Julie Goldman out of New York.
Yeah. Julie Goldman. Do I know her? I don't know her. Is she funny?
She's real funny.
Oh, that's good. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give away some tickets. It's not clear to me how many tickets. Two tickets. Here's what you do. You call, if you're the first caller right now at 877-520-1150, and you ask for Justin and say, hey, it's me, I win. All right? You'll get two tickets. Do it now. 877-520-1150. Tell them that Mark told you to call him. Just say, Justin, it's me. Mark and Rick said to call, and then I can go to the show. Just say that.
Real casual.
Yeah, just act like it's like, hey, man, I don't mean to bother you while you're doing your job. So
the world is your roommate.
Overton, we've got some clip from your website that Sweetie Bill Kolar pulled off of your thing. What is this?
This is fun. You can see it on YouTube, and it's on my site, and it's... a thing called Billy Schultz, supposing Charles Schultz, the creator of Peanuts, had an illegitimate son who's real bitter about it and trying to cash in on his dad's career.
Okay, and this is from that.
Our week-long cartoonist tribute continues as we now return to Modern Masters, the Charles Schultz story.
Peanuts did not have to end because Charles did. And I vowed I would continue the strip.
Despite no formal art training, Billy let nothing deter him from forging ahead.
I'm an electrical engineer by trade, so when I first started drawing the strip, I wasn't sure I could fill such big shoes. But as it turns out, everything is okay. My fourth grade teacher said she didn't think I had one creative bone in my entire body. She said she couldn't believe I was the son of such a brilliant man.
But was he even the son of Charles Schultz? Some disagreed.
So what if he never let me call him dad? That's what he gets for sleeping around so much.
That's he got the idea.
Very busy man dedicated to his work.
All right.
You got the idea.
That YouTube thing, that's a weird thing, that thing. Mm-hmm. I got to get hip to that a little more. Somebody shot me an email and said, have you seen the interview with you on YouTube. And I'm like,
what?
What the hell? And, you know, it was one of those interviews that somebody did in front of Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco with me. It was some kid. And I said, okay, I didn't realize. I forget now when you agree to anything just because you're like, yeah, I'll help the guy out. That literally millions of people are going to be able to go see it.
Yeah.
But he was one of those interviewers, like, you know, where the questions are designed to make them look, you know, clever and arty and make you look like an idiot. You know those ones where they're like, so, okay, Marc Maron, asparagus or a good movie?
What?
Yeah, and you're like, right, and you got to sit there and try and bring them together.
And then he'll cut back in on Adobe Photoshop and put a really great question in and then cut back to your what?
You're going, you know? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Like, if you had a choice of doing stand-up on the Titanic or in the Hindenburg, what would you do? You know,
day job?
Yeah. But he was all right. You know, I just it just seems that I've been misrepresented by myself in so many different media formats.
You get why you have to be careful in interviews now. Each one of them's on record.
Exactly. I never shut up, dude. I got a real problem. But that one, I was stifled. I'd been up all night from doing my other show, and I was tongue-tied.
You sound like a comic to me, mister.
But usually, I'm just blah, blah, blah. It's like, hold on, sit yourself down, Tyke, and I'll tell you about the history of comedy. It all started when Lenny Bruce decided to throw away his mimicry and actually turn it out.
You mean the potty mouth? Golly, mister.
Yes, sir. And then Richard Pryor picked up the ball, as did Woody Allen, and took it in two separate directions, thus defining the world of modern comedy.
Okay, my mom's here with the SUV. I gotta go.
So, dude, you must. Do you ever? I'm looking at. I'm still on your website, and you've been in every movie since the beginning of time. But some movies I don't remember because I didn't see them. What's it? But have you got any of these out? You were in Willow.
Yes.
What were you in Willow?
You remember the two little French brownie dudes in the backpack?
I'm the king of the world.
Oh, that's
no,
right.
We go this way, that way.
It was me and Kevin Pollak.
Pollock.
Yes, that's
he's a
right.
good guy. He did my last Morning Sedition show. You were in Beverly Hills Cop?
Yes.
What were you that?
I'm the security warehouse guy that runs the whole place when my big goofy officer gives him a match and I, you know, around all this cardboard in the bonded warehouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you'll see me, a real skinny young me with a big tuft of hair on top of my head.
Yeah.
And not off to the sides. You know, I call that the bozone hole.
The bozone.
That's
hole.
My bozone right there. And that's me. A little 25 year ago me.
That's unbelievable. Mrs. Doubtfire, My Giant. What were you in My Giant? Did I see that movie?
Yeah, I actually play the director of Steven Seagal. I play Michael Lehman's part.
Okay.
As Lehman in Lehman's film, in the film. So.
Now, out of all of these things that you've done in your entire career, is there one where you're like, oh, God, look at me?
One? Is there one like that? Hey, I got to work, man. I got blacklisted out of comedy. I had to take every single thing that the dart hit, you know, everything that was al dente and stuck.
What do you mean you got blacklisted out of comedy? Who the hell blacklisted Rick Overton?
Oh.
You were one of the originals, man. You go back in the old days in the original improv on 44th Street, there are pictures of Rick Overton as a child.
Yeah, but he was in red. He was a red.
I was born a blue baby, but then I switched red.
You switched to red.
Yeah,
in the
70s? when the money rolled in.
There were pictures of you hanging in that wall. It's the weirdest thing. Silver and Bud's old wall at the original improv, and it's a picture of you and a team, and you being all wacky.
Wacky and flexible, like, and limber.
1972.
Yeah. You bet.
Wow,
man.
You know, someone made a copy of that wall of photographs into like almost a wallpaper that they have at the new improv that she has nothing to do with, that Bud doesn't have anything to do with down there on 52nd or whatever.
And I went by it.
You did. You saw it, right? Yeah. I just wonder what impact, you know, these urban audiences when they're looking at, you know, pictures of Lenny Schultz and Ron Darien.
Yeah, and Jay Leno with a pipe.
Yeah, with a pipe.
Smoking his pipe.
Yeah.
His Boston pipe.
Oh, my God. Everybody was in a team in those days. It was encouraged to be in a team in the improv groups.
There was no money anyway. There was no check to split.
So just have fun, right?
Yeah. When money came in, it destroyed teams.
We had Ed Begley in here. He was in a team with Michael Richards.
That's right.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Did you see them?
Yes. They're hilarious. They're funny. Yeah. Do you remember when Michael Keaton was a comic?
No, it's before
Brilliant
my time.
Brilliant comic.
Really?
Man, hip, edgy, weird, great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
New to Get Out, though.
Well, look, I mean, yeah. he did the money, they did the movie jump, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that's, every comic gets to jump, but he got to, and his act was so great that he ditched a brilliant act.
But I made the step towards radio. I didn't even have to jump. Literally, I just have to step over here, and here I am behind this mic.
Well, we're grateful for it.
Well, thank you very much. So what are we going to do on this show? I mean, Durst, do you do a separate act, a different act for the Laughing Liberally? Is it we play
well,
into
I kind of, you know, I certainly share all the values. I simply think that we don't need sides right now. I think there's someone else who cashes in on selling us our separate felt banners, and I don't want to see them make another nickel off of me.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be the actual D-sider. I'd like to remove sides and get people to sort of, you know, every other species in trouble forms a herd. I don't know what happened to us.
Yeah, well, they've exploited that fear, and they've created demographics. That's what's happened to us, is that our herd mentality that is based on fear has been exploited by people that resell us what they think we should be afraid of, and whether that's a product or whether it's a political ideology, they've defined how the herd works.
Exactly. Mm. We're being shepherded.
The
dogs are nipping at our heels.
Screw the shepherd! Is that what we're saying?
Well, the shepherd's had a turn with us. I think it's about fair.
Yeah, that's it. We're taking it back.
That's right. The sheep are ganging up on the shepherd.
We just got to get the sheep speaking the truth. You know, I fought with you on this. You remember back when I had the show, Morning's Edition,
what was the topic here? What were we talking about?
You were like,
we've got to
open the tent. You don't push them away. Don't push the Reds, the Republicans away or the believers.
They're making up their minds right now, man. They are the disillusionati out there. They are figuring out what the heck's going on. They're watching their side crumble, and wouldn't it be great if they don't get a big resounding slap at the other doorway as they walk over to try the other side?
Yes, but we can't appease them with values that aren't ours. That's still my issue. That we can invite them in and say, sit down, have a hot cocoa. But we can't make any concessions.
I don't say become them. Yes. I'm saying we don't hate you, the person who's been duped, because I'll go so far as to admit Clinton took me a couple of miles down the wrong road with that NAFTA thing before I wised up. We'd all been had, Dad.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So I'd say it's time to be the species again, you know. Let's just be smart species, survive this, go to Star Trek. We'll come up with new labels for all our parties.
Okay, all right, good. All right, yeah. Well, that makes a little more sense to me. I'm glad
We disagreed.
We didn't disagree. I was angry.
I just don't want to hit him with a big, hose full of angry whiz in the doorway and then turn him away. Oh, he would have been a customer, and we just chased another customer off,
Angry whiz.
Angry whiz hose.
A hose.
With the big kind that knocks you off your feet.
Jim, angry whiz. Jim likes fear pee.
Fear pee.
But that's not angry pee. That's
sugar-free fear pee with Splenda.
Which is okay, right, Splenda?
It's much better for you.
So you were blacklisted from comedy.
Well, it just got hard after my 91 special, because one of these days I'll pop that tape in for you, show you what I got.
I think I've seen it. What was that? Yeah. What happened? Was that in Florida or somewhere?
Can you speak about Chicago?
That? Yeah, I kind of called how the media's playing us and ramping us up for a big sucker punch and all that stuff, and suddenly, bloop, and it was a killer spot. It was a killer half hour for HBO.
Right.
And suddenly, late night kind of went shpoop.
Really?
Late night TV wouldn't touch me with a stick then for a while. This
really?
Is in 91 for the first Gulf War is when I hit that one.
Okay, so that it was
I
a direct response
called
to the war.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And since that time, I was viewed as a liability until people are finally coming around to seeing that, what guys like us are saying is turning out truer and truer every
day.
Right,
right. Yeah. That's interesting. I always assume that they're too stupid to even keep a pulse on what people are saying unless they're huge celebrities. That I've always thought, even with people like Hicks, when he was alive, he seemed to get a few through. But I think that there are decisions people make when they say certain things that they're going to be rowing their own boat. But rarely, usually when you do a show, if you were to do a late night show, and I'm not saying you weren't blacklisted, but you got to sit there and you got to tell them what you're going to do anyways.
I did, and they didn't like it.
Okay.
I mean, I could have given them the set they want, but you could have gotten one of those sets out of anybody.
That's right. Squeeze it.
I didn't know how to live with myself and just drum out one of those instead of the one I was in my heart writing,
Exactly.
I had to tough it out, I guess. But here we are. That my comeuppance is finally coming around. And by the way, we hate that we're right.
Yeah.
We don't like being right. It's not like we get some adrenal secret sexual kick out of being correct about this.
I get a little surge.
Yeah?
A little bit. Sure. Don't you? Come on, a little bit.
A little plump.
Yeah. Not a huge one.
I'm pumping up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel good.
We're not at the ballpark place.
No. So how are we doing with numbers on this thing? Are we getting some tickets?
Loading in. There's a little elbow room left, but you might want to be smart and catch a phenomenon. You know, I missed the bus to Woodstock.
You did?
Yeah.
Were you supposed to be on it? Did you really?
Yeah, this will be joke stock. But not stock jokes, I promise you that.
Now, where is the Walford Theater? I'm going to try and go to the website right now. I should have it right in front of you. This is Saturday. It's June 3rd. It's Laughing Liberally.
UCLA.
You can get tickets at ktlk.com if you go there. And it's going to be myself. It's going to be Rick Overton. It's going to be Will Durst. It's going to be Jim David, who's very funny. I used to do Tough Crowd with him all the time. It's going to be Dean Obadalla, who is a half-Palestinian, half-Italian comedian. And you can guarantee that he's going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But you can go to ktlk.com for tickets and see us all.
That's right.
And Rick Overton has been our guest. You can hang out for a minute. We're going to do something. I'm going to try and pull up the... Here it is. Quick here for info. I should have this right in front of me, but you know what? I'll tell you what it is in just a second. Stay with us. It's the Mark Maron Show.
Depressed because you haven't heard anything funny yet? Well, me too. Well, all that's about to change, maybe, because Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
And now, where is Natalie Holloway? I don't know.
I don't either. That's Jerry Springer. He talks about it for hours sometimes. We're on the air here with it's the Mark Maron Show. We're here with Rick Overton, who was blacklisted in the early 90s for speaking his mind about a popular war, I guess. It was being sold as such.
Yeah.
We're going to be at the Walford Theater. That is June 3rd, Saturday. You can go to ktlk.com for the Laughing Liberally Show. Please come if you're in the LA area. That's at 11301 Wilshire Boulevard. That's out there in Westwood. It'll be fun. We just gave away some tickets. Congratulations to the winner. I don't know who that is because we're not doing it live, but if you asked for Justin and you did what I told you to do. So now the clubs are coming back around, obviously.
Yeah, Laugh Factory's doing huge again. I'm doing comedy camp for kids with them on the 10th. We're having auditions. If kids got kids that think they're funny between like 10 and 15, bring them in.
You're doing comedy camp?
Yeah, we teach kids, make a next generation of us.
What happened? Come on. All right, you do what you got to do.
Got to give it back, man.
You give it back? But, I mean, already they're putting people on television that have got 2 years, these green people, people like me that you pay the dues. I ain't bitter, Rick.
I'm getting them to pay the dues earlier.
All right, but you're not saying, do they get a TV deal at the end of the summer?
Yeah, I'd rather be working with a kid that knows what he's doing on a show than one they just dragged off the street from the soda shop, you know, one that can sell me a line back.
Hey, I came from a soda shop.
Yeah. No, shop right is employees right. Now,
what the hell did you, now look, where's your resentment? Where's your bitterness? Where is it, Rick? You always come in here, you're always full with the light and the joy. What the hell is that about? Did you have to read a book like this? I just got this anger management. I have to read it.
I'm signed with Anger Management.
Are you?
To handle my career.
I'm glad you're eating candy on the radio.
Sorry.
It's a good choice. Where did that anger go? Did you ever have it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm an old scrapper, man.
Are you really?
I used to be able to pick it up and drop it down. I got knocked down a few times myself, and I found out I understand karma better.
Okay.
Here's what my understanding of karma is. Yeah. I used to make fun of bald guys.
Yeah.
That's my understanding of karma.
Oh man!
So I'm putting out what I want back.
Okay, I got to work on that. I wonder if that's in this book. Karma. Okay, I'm gonna have to check it out. We're gonna do these jokes. All right. It's nice seeing you.
It's
see you. Are you okay? We're doing the thing this weekend. Are you not doing anything before then?
I'll be at Trusta Verde on Wednesday.
Okay, I'll be in Santa Barbara on Friday.
Where are you gonna be, baby?
At the hotel up there. Is that by Trusta Verde?
Oh, in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, there's a new gig up there. I'll talk about it later.
Who's booking that?
I know. I'll tell you in a minute. Let me do the jokes. Here's the
comics. Uncontrollable. God.
Here we go.
You get free drink tickets?
Short order news version 2. In another move to revive his troubled presidency, George Bush nominated the CEO of Goldman Sachs to replace resigning Treasury Secretary John Snow. This guy Paulson is uniquely qualified for the job because he will be able to explain Bush's economic policies from the point of view of the 12 people who benefit from them. A deadly traffic accident in Kabul, Afghanistan, involving U.S. troops sparked the worst riot in the Afghan capital since the fall of the Taliban. Afghans say they feel the riots went so well they are ready for professional soccer. Professional soccer. Yeah. You have both. All right. Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson says he has accomplished the amazing feat of leg pressing 2,000 pounds. According to his website, Robertson said he worked his way up to lifting a ton with the help of his physician, Dr. I Am Nuts. I Am Nuts. I got to do this other one again. Robertson attributes his strength to an age-defying protein shake that contains soy protein isolate, apple cider vinegar, and, of course, Jesus berries. Yay! Rick Overton's been here the whole time. I'll tell you, the guy booking that's a kid named Jordy. I'm going up with Eddie Pepitone. Tomorrow.
Oh, Eddie P.
Eddie P, very funny. We've got to get him back on the show, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Eddie Pepitone will come on the show and do this.
I think he has a hearing problem.
Maybe.
We all do.
Tomorrow, Jay Babcock, editor-in-chief of Arthur Magazine. Dan Millman, author of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Yes.
Mike Betcher from NBC News in Iraq to address the loss of some media people over there. Dave Diane from DaveDiane.com for the News Crunch. Good night, sheeple. What book's that gig you're doing?